You know, after Bible readings, so often we say, the word of the Lord for the people of the Lord, or the word of God for the people of God. After that one, I want to say, gruesome and awful. It reads like this list of things to avoid. It's an awful account of Ahab and Naboth and Jezebel and Elijah. And it shows things to avoid. Now, it doesn't say in them, avoid these things, although it kind of does. You just know resentment, a sense of entitlement, lying, murder, theft. And I'm good with avoiding all of those. So we could stop right there and say, what have you learned today? Don't do those things. But there are a few more thoughts maybe that we might have from that. See, Naboth wasn't harming anyone. Granted, he wanted to keep his land and he wouldn't sell it. But Ahab just wanted it. And he did offer to pay well for it. And since Naboth wouldn't do what Ahab wanted, Jezebel told Ahab just to take it. Just take it. And Jezebel hatched a scheme that ended with Naboth dead and the field in Ahab's possession. And then Elijah got wind of the whole scene, and he went to Ahab, threatening his total destruction. And that's the end of the reading. Now, if we went further, the reading was so long, but after the reading, Ahab begged for forgiveness. He got forgiveness, destruction averted, at least for the time being. I mean, things would happen later, but the destruction was postponed until a future generation. But Naboth was still dead. He was murdered, and Ahab and Jezebel were in the clear. And that's messed up. That's completely messed up. It shows a complete abuse of power. Ahab's the king. Jezebel married to the king. They have power. They can pretty much do whatever they want, or they can scheme or not scheme. They abused power. We live in a world where people still abuse power. Ahab and Jezebel got off. I mean, they weren't punished for all of this. Of course, they did have to say they were sorry and everything, but then they got off with a light or no punishment at all. They cashed in their privilege as royal people. In our society today, we cash in privilege all the time to have lighter punishments for awful crimes, to have ways to get out of serving prison time or having restitution. We cash in justice or cash in privilege all the time. And then there are those among us, and there are people throughout the world who cry out for justice. And on one hand, justice is this is what is right, choosing between right and wrong and making sure that the tables aren't tipped in the favor of any one particular class of people, group of people, color of skin, sexual orientation, gender identity, any of those things. That's justice, where things are equal. But also justice all too often means revenge. I want justice for what they did to me. I want justice for what they did to them. And revenge never gets us anywhere. Goodness, I'm missing a piece here. We'll just go with it. The things I'm about to say are, they're a little difficult to hear. The United Church of Christ put out a meme. Actually, it was an article that became a meme called 10 Things You Can Do to Actively Reject White Privilege. Now, all of us here live with privilege, or at least most of us here live with privilege. And it's hard to hear when we talk about it because it's very easy for a person who lives with privilege and doesn't have to think about all these other things that people without privilege have to think about, saying like, well, my life is hard. I have problems. I have to do all of this. And what about the time I got a ticket? And what about it was difficult to get into college and I had to work my way? And all of those things are true, but it's true, we live with privilege. We don't have to think about the dirty looks that come about when we're in a grocery store or being profiled because of the color of our skin, or to teach our children to never, ever, ever speak up. Otherwise, they might be in a place where their life would be in danger. So here are some things that a writer from the United Church of Christ wrote about actively rejecting white privilege. They won't be easy to hear. And I hope that as I say them, that you hear them from the position that they come and don't just go with, oh, that's awful, I just don't believe that. Hear the words of a person who lives without the privilege that I live with. How can we reject white privilege? Well, the first way is when we're advocates at marches, at places where we're speaking out against injustice to any class of people, any skin or anything, if you're not in that group of people, and I know we're all together, but if you're not in that group of people, keep your mouth shut or be quiet. Let the people who are being abused, or let the people who are standing up for their rights when they've been taken away, are there. So let's keep our mouths shut. Be present. Be in solidarity. But don't take over. How about this one? Listen when people call you out on microaggressions. See, our intent to be anti-racist doesn't necessarily mean that we automatically fit the bill. If someone calls you out on a microaggression, don't argue, just listen. If you knew a word or a phrase was offensive, you probably wouldn't have said it. Being an ally doesn't mean you're above being educated, though, right? Here's one. Never invite a person of color to the table for the sake of claiming diversity. Diversity is a new buzzword, and diversity work is a very profitable industry. So don't invite people of color to your events so that you can say that they personify diversity or to hit an organizational quota. Engage with diverse communities because you plan on being intentional about hearing the stories of that community and letting people come to the table authentically, so that everyone has a seat at the table, a voice in the conversation. Here's one that, it happened in high school. I didn't say it this way, but people like to say, but I've got a friend who's a person of color. Refrain from using your person of color friends as your urban dictionary. If you're engaging in discussions about race, you won't always understand cultural references. Your person of color friends or colleagues are not your urban dictionary. The writer of the article talking about this said, yes, I've heard people ask me if they should look up words I've used in the urban dictionary. You may have to do some research to participate in anti-racism work, and that's okay. Just think, people of color spend their entire lives learning about culture from white supremacist perspective. Even that's loaded there, but the white culture in the United States does kind of control so much. A few minutes on Google won't hurt you to try to figure out what you're talking about. Stop lifting up non-confrontational people of color as examples for what people of color activism should be. Martin Luther King Jr. was a great man, but he wrote more than his I Have a Dream speech. A few white folks quote his letter from a Birmingham jail to talk about King's legacy. Here's what he said in that. I have almost reached the regrettable conclusion that the Negro's great stumbling block in his stride toward freedom is not the white citizens' counselor or the Ku Klux Klanner, but the white moderate who is more devoted to order than to justice. History through a white lens immortalizes the safe, diluted parts of liberation and hopes, and hopes that people of color seeking future liberation will in similar ways. The framework centers the comfort of white folks and disregards the complexity of processing and rebelling against oppression. And here's the thing. Experiencing racism is a lot more uncomfortable than experiencing a radical response to it. If you're uncomfortable with expressions of emotional pain by the oppressed, you may want to work harder at dismantling their oppression. Call your friends, family, and coworkers out on racism, even if a person of color isn't in the room. The writer says, I've had plenty of friends tell me stories about times their family members, friends, or colleagues said something racist. I usually wonder why they are telling me when most of their stories don't end with them comforting the racism they encountered or confronting the racism they encountered. How do you confront racism when the spotlight isn't on you? Does it take a protest or a speech for you to call it out? Can you address the racism of people you love most? It's a hard one. Understand that all anti-racism work doesn't look the same and advocate accordingly. Sometimes anti-racism work is about black folks. Sometimes anti-racism work is about the entire African diaspora. Sometimes anti-racism work is about Asian American folks. Sometimes anti-racism work is about Southeast Asian immigrants. People of color is an umbrella term that doesn't address the complexities of the many people who experience racism. Understand that people of color don't go to bed in one-size-fits-all pajamas. Struggles, liberations require nuanced thinking and action. Realize that all discussions about race aren't for you, and be okay with that. Should black people say the N-word to each other? Should Beyonce express her pain by calling somebody Becky? Some conversations aren't for the white folks. They are intra-racial critiques that don't require an ally's opinion. An anti-racist ally is like a guest at a family dinner. You're invited to the table, but you should know what conversations require your abstention. It's not easy to do, especially when we come from a position of power, a position of privilege. But it goes back to the first part. Sometimes we just need to keep our mouths shut. Be present. Be an ally. Stand for justice. But we don't have to have an opinion on every single thing. And then this last one. This last one is the hardest one to hear. It's the one that probably will make us most angry. It's the one that will probably result in letters coming to the church. It already has resulted in letters coming and articles being written and people doing exactly the opposite of all of this. But here's what it says. Recognize that you're still racist no matter what. Sometimes anti-racist allies talk in an us versus them framework when they discuss race, with the us being people of color and anti-racist allies, and them being the racist people. And that's an oversimplification of centuries of racism, and also avoids one simple truth. White people always benefit from institutionalized racism, no matter how anti-racist our ideologies may be. Can't disconnect ourselves completely from the racism from which we benefit. And recognizing that is a large step in rejecting white privilege. So we go from Ahab and Jezebel and Elijah and Naboth and privilege of the king and privilege of getting away with it. Privilege of being thought to be the good people and everyone else being the bad people. The privilege of committing a crime and getting away with it or getting a light punishment because of that privilege. My brothers and sisters, let us be the people who seek justice, love kindness, and walk humbly. Let us be the people who attend to one another, no matter who we are or where we are on life's journey. Let us be the people who hear hard truths and who continually seek ways to love. Let us be the people who listen for, seek, and choose justice. Amen.